Welcome to Relationships 2.0. My name is Michelle Skeen. My special guest today is Janet Lynn Roseman. She is the author of If Joan of Arc Had Cancer, Finding Courage, Faith, and Healing from History's Most Inspirational Woman Warrior. Welcome, Janet.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, I'm happy to have you. I love history, and I love reading about strong, inspirational women, and I love that you applied this for women who are struggling with cancer. Can you tell the audience how this all came about?
I can. Actually, you know, Joan really found me. I was having my own struggles after my mother had passed, and I was just a mess. I mean, truly a mess. And I went to one of my favorite consignment stores in the area, which I love to do, and I was just walking around, and literally within 5 minutes, before I went in, I was talking to my mom and asking her for a sign, and as I'm wandering, you know, in the consignment store, literally a painting fell at my feet. And I picked it up, and it was a really, really old painting of Joan of Arc on her horse, holding her sword, held, you know, high up to the sky. And I thought, oh, my God, that's it. I'm going to write a book about Joan of Arc.
And That's amazing.
Yeah. I really wanted to pay tribute to my mom's courage and other women that I've loved and lost. And
yeah.
I really was seeking a strong woman, and here she was. I can't think of anybody stronger.
You mention briefly in the book in the beginning of the book that there are some misconceptions about people with cancer and this idea that, you know, negative thinking can bring it about or positive thinking can prevent it. Give a little bit of a background on what you found out through, working with your clients, having family members and other loved ones who struggled and in some cases succumbed to cancer, and what you learned from all of that as, personally and as a clinician.
Big question.
It is about,
Well, first of all, I should say I do not have all the answers. You know, I only have an opinion.
Yeah, that's what I want.
And
it's valuable.
Yeah, thank you. And everybody has their own point of view. But one thing that always irks me, especially, you find it a lot in New Age books, you know, if you only say your affirmations, everything will be perfect. And if only that was true. You know, life sometimes is messy and things happen, and I'm the first to say, you know, I don't know why. You know, I really don't know why. But I don't like this kind of one size fits all thinking that somehow if someone has cancer, you know, they somehow caused it because they had a bad attitude.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they were mean people or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's enough guilt and trauma with a diagnosis like that to lay on that kind of mythology is so, not only is it false, but it's extremely dangerous. And I think, you know, let's look at the lives of the saints who had terrible illnesses, you know, in their life. And I don't think they were negative thinkers. So it just, I've gotten into arguments with people, but I hate it. I think it does a real disservice. And, you know, I wanted to correct that.
Yeah.
And this was one way. And I should add, I mean, obviously feeling positive and hopeful and, you know, having intention to get the very best treatment, of course, is going to help you, but not only, you know, if you're ill, I mean, it's going to help you in life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. And you mentioned some of the traditional things that are looked at, or that are encouraged when some, or either in the, with the prevention of cancer or once you have it. And I was going to see if I could find where I marked that in the book, but, you know, one of it was like positive attitude, you know, taking care of yourself, sorry, I can't find this.
Saying no.
Yeah, and what I'm wondering is that mm-hmm. you know, you clearly believe that there are other things that people need just besides like a good support system and you know, and good health care and healthy food and a healthy lifestyle and all of that when they're battling cancer. And that's where this book came from, was this place that this hole that you wanted to fill. Talk about that and why this is important to you and how you planned out this whole book. I love the way it's organized too. We'll talk about that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's so sweet. You know, I think I wrote this book as a place of empowerment. I mean, I wrote it obviously for women, but I think anybody, you know, man, woman, teenager, you know, would benefit. And it's interesting. I've heard from a lot of people who've said, you know, I think this would be helpful for anybody going through a difficult time. And
and
that was, you know, really lovely to hear. But I think, you know, everybody needs different things for their own nurturance and for their own soul. And I, my point of view is, you know, it's about empowerment for women, and it's about empowerment for a woman who happens to have a diagnosis of cancer.
Right.
So, you know, having an army of support is important in life, but having an army of support when you have a serious illness is even more important. And I'm very, you know, I feel extremely passionate about, you know, finding people who are going to attend to you and hear you and witness what you're going through, and not just, you know, looking at your blood levels, but looking at your whole life, you know, looking at the holistic view, because we're more than physicality. You know, we're a lot more. And it's disturbing that people will settle to work with a clinician who is rude or, you know, not compassionate or doesn't want to listen to you. And I tell people, you know, well, then you get another opinion, and then you keep
talking.
Because you're in charge. You know, it's your team. You're hiring your team. And at the very end of the book, I have a whole, you know, chapter on creating your team, but also a code of healing where I implore people to really pay attention and to select people with discernment and to really take charge. Imperative. And, you know, even things I can just read a little bit, you know, I expect my healthcare providers to return my calls in a timely manner.
Yeah.
You know, I'll only ask for help from people in my army of support who can honor my request, and really sticking to that, you know, making yourself the priority and not settling.
Do you think that one of the reasons that maybe women don't advocate for themselves as well or need this kind of encouragement that your book provides is because there's shame that goes along with a diagnosis of cancer or any illness, but because it can be viewed or often is viewed as like a sign of weakness?
You know, I think women often don't advocate for themselves because of, you know, many different reasons. I mean, clearly, yes, it can be seen as a sign of weakness. They're afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
I always hate when people say, oh, she was so strong and she battled this and never once did she complain. And I'm thinking, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
She's a human being, or he's a human being. I mean,
right.
What's wrong with complaining or asking for help? I mean, that's just crazy making. And I think it's important to really look at and reflect on what it is you need and really spend time creating, you know, creating that whole program and what will support you, who will support you.
Yeah. And how to ask for that from different people, right?
Yes.
I think it's always difficult to, everyone requires different things when they're struggling with an illness or any challenges in their life. And it's often tricky to know how to approach someone because everyone responds differently or wants something different. Like some people want people around them all the time. Someone else might not want people around them all the time. So just as some advice for people who have loved ones who are struggling with cancer, what's the best way to approach that person in this situation?
You know, I think being honest and authentic to yourself and being able to say, you know, I would love to help you do A, B, or C, but I'm exhausted and I'm not able to do that. Or saying, you know, I'm really would love some company to go to my medical appointments with. Can you come with me? I'd really appreciate the support. And also, you know, when you ask for help, and this is really key, knowing who you think you can count on. I mean, if you've had experiences with people that have always let you down, I don't think that's going to
change. Yeah, don't ask them.
Exactly. I mean, look,
they're not going to start showing up for something like this, right?
Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but really looking for people who can support you and asking, you know, asking other women or other people who are in the same situation for maybe community support. And and actually, you know, this book was written for those who don't have support so they could really count on Joan. You know, Joan is their ally and their companion.
Yeah, and it's so great that you brought in this really strong figure to serve as kind of a companion through the struggle and the fight with cancer.
Thank you.
I know everyone needs a reminder about Joan of Arc's story. I know it was great for me to reread that, and I think we're all really familiar with the name, and but the details may have faded or never been, we were never familiar with them. So can you share with the audience the story of Joan of Arc and get everyone up to date on their history?
Well, I can try.
And we'll do, we only have a couple of minutes before we go to break, and then you can continue after.
Oh, sure. Well, Joan, you know, I did a book signing recently and someone said, oh, she really existed? Are you sure? And I said,
Funny.
I'm real sure. But when you think of, you know, the mid-14th century, a teenage girl leaving her home on a farm who didn't read or write, going to feeling firmly that she was the person who would help the deposed king be, again, resurrected as the king of France, the rightful king of France, the Dauphin. You know, she's 15 years old, and she's traveling by herself, and she ends up convincing the king that she is the right person. And all along, and for many, many years, Joan has had visions. So she has had visitations with many saints who have told her of her mission, and she follows them. I mean, she follows the voices, she follows the direction, and supposedly when she did meet the rightful king of France who was, you know, hiding out, she was able to share with him some secrets that no one would know. And that's what really convinced him to make her the leader. So imagine this teenager, she's leading like thousands and thousands, over 20,000 men to battle against the British. This is against the English, I should say.
Amazing.
This is what she did. She is leading a battle. And not just one, many battles. And she's winning. And that's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. I mean, for our time, it would be extraordinary.
Yeah. Even for someone three times her age.
Yes, yes. And, you know, sadly, well, for him, he does get his rightful crown. And Joan becomes quite popular. And people adore her, as you can imagine. And she's taken prisoner by the English and subjected to a trial. And I include, actually, transcripts from the trial, which was my inspiration, so, you know, readers could hear her voice.
Yeah.
But she is steadfast during her trial. She doesn't back down. And tragically, the king, who's now the king, he does nothing to help her. I mean, she was chained for over a year and a half during her trial in chains, leg chains, 24 hours. And he does nothing to lift a finger because, you know, he does not like her popularity. And it's very convenient if they could get rid of her in a nice way and he wouldn't have to take any blame. And she goes to trial, and she faces her court of men who are really not interested in hearing what she has to say, and she does not back down. This teenage girl does not back down.
Cliffhanger. We're going to do a little cliffhanger here and go to a break.
Okay.
And when we come back, you can finish Joan's story, and we'll dive in to your book a bit more as well. You're listening to Relationships 2.0, and we'll be back in a few short minutes. Stay tuned. Do you tend to overreact and let your emotions rule your interactions with others? Do you become defensive or find it difficult to see things from another's point of view? Hi, I'm Michelle Skeen. You're not alone. Despite the fact that we all have to deal with people in our daily lives, many of us have difficulties with interpersonal relationships. My suggestion? Pick up a copy of the Interpersonal Problems Workbook. This book combines powerful evidence-based techniques for strengthening relationships in all areas of your life, whether it's at home or work, with a significant other, a parent, or your child. To find out more about the Interpersonal Problems Workbook, go to my website, www.michelleskeen.com. Again, www.michelleskeen.com. Pick up a copy and improve your relationships.
America's wounded warriors are coming home. After serving on foreign shores, these brave men and women are returning to their families and communities. Many have wounds you can see, and many have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Now that these warriors are back home, they are ready to enter the civilian workforce. To help, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These extraordinary men and women bring proven world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork to the job. And to ensure the right warrior finds the right job, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right match. When you hire a wounded warrior, you hire an intelligent, talented, and committed new employee. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, I'm Michelle Skeen, psychologist, author, and host of Relationships 2.0. On my radio show, I interview guests who present their unique perspectives and expertise on topics that cover all aspects of relationship. If you want to improve your relationship, and let's face it, we all have room for improvement,
Tune in to Relationships 2.0 with Dr. Michelle Steen. If you miss my show or you're interested in listening to past podcasts, you can go to my website, www.michelleskeen.com. Again, www.michelleskeen.com. Tune in and improve your relationships.
Welcome back to Relationships 2.0. I'm chatting with Janet Roseman. She's the author of If Joan of Arc Had Cancer. So, Janet, you were giving us the rundown on Joan of Arc. We left off with her being on trial.
Yes, she was on trial. She was chained to her bed for over a year and a half. 24 hours a day, and she was in chains. She was humiliated. Everyone who participated in the trial, their only agenda was to get rid of her and to make her wrong and to make her admit that her visions were, you know, she made up her visions, and to really, they wanted to destroy her. They wanted to destroy her integrity, and they wanted to destroy her as a person, which they actually succeeded in doing, and she was condemned to die by fire, and she was burned at the stake.
That's awful. You say in the book that she had something like 750 visions.
Yes, yes, during her whole life. It started actually when she was a child, so before... Well, one could say when she left, she was still a child because she was only 14 years old. But
yeah.
She started having visions, and she was a very, you know, she came from humble means. She lived on a farm. She took care of the animals. She sewed. She read the Bible, or, you know, she listened to the Bible out loud that her mom would read her. So this wasn't someone that one would think would be selected, you know, to save France. And she had visions for a very long time and kept it to herself. I mean, mm-hmm. It was a very private experience for her. And even during her trial, she continued to have visions in her jail cell. And she was told. She was told what would happen to her. She was told she was injured, actually, during one of the battles, and she was told that she would be injured, but that she would survive. And so everything was orchestrated, you know, very in detail. So she had all of the information, you know, going in, and, of course, we'll never,
yeah.
You know, we know what the trial transcripts say, but we'll never truly know what her experience was like, because we can only wonder.
Yeah.
What wasn't put in.
One of the things that you talk about in the book that really struck me, mm-hmm. you know, there is such a great emphasis on courage, and then you bring up the meaning of vulnerability. And I think that still people associate vulnerability with weakness.
Yes.
So often. And I'd love for you to talk about how people can maybe rethink their perception of vulnerability and their relationship with it.
You know, vulnerability, just like fear, has a really bad rap, you know. It's something that we look at as, oh, you know, she's so vulnerable, that's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it isn't a bad thing, and even I would suggest, you know, when you feel fear, that's not a bad thing either. It's informing you.
Right.
You know, it's an emotion that's informing you to pay attention, and the same thing with when we're feeling vulnerable. I mean, really taking a look at what is it that's making us feel so vulnerable. Is it a situation? Is it something that someone said to us? You know, cancer by its very definition, of course, will make us feel vulnerable because we're not, you know, we're not who we were before. Once you have that diagnosis, you will change.
Yeah.
So you will become another person, but that doesn't have to be a person who's less than. You know,
right.
That can be a person who's full of and empowered.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about perception. And
yeah.
I think it's a cultural thing. You know, I think we've been taught, you know, the brave person doesn't complain and doesn't share vulnerability, but I would suggest it's the courageous person who trusts themselves enough and also would share with someone that they trust that they're feeling vulnerable.
Yeah.
Not everybody can sit with that.
Yeah. Back to that whole idea earlier that, you know, strength is associated with silence. Like if someone's really strong, it means they're not talking about what's wrong with them or they're not complaining. They're suffering in silence, and that's a sign of strength when that isn't the only way that strength manifests itself.
Yeah, actually, I would say that that's not strength. That's just, you know, really taking all of those emotions and internalizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to go somewhere, and I think it's extremely harmful. And, you know, not to be able to say your truth, and obviously in the right situation and to the right people, is harmful because then what are you going to do with all of those feelings of fear and anxiety and emotion and rage and anger, and all of those emotions are appropriate.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to really take stock of where you are, you know, because that will change.
Well, you talk about giving yourself permission to experience the full spectrum of emotions, negative and positive and all of that. And that is important to really be in touch with yourself. And, you know, you go on to talk about, well, we could talk about intuition as well as meditation and how those can be helpful in this on this journey as well. So talk about those and why you think that they're important.
Well, I included, you know, in the first half of the book, there's meditations after every chapter. And each chapter is an attribute that I found that Joan exhibited, you know, or I was inspired to include, such as valor or courage or surrendering,
right,
or prayer or, you know, a number of things. But I wanted to offer the reader, I sort of envisioned it as a guidebook for a month that they could read the transcript from Joan's trial, look at the attribute, and then do a meditation.
Yeah.
There's also a direct intuitive message from Joan, and really all of the meditations are directly linked with the attribute, and the second part of the book is much more self-reflective, and it's arts-based medicine, really, you know, using narrative and visualizations and art and a number of arts-based therapies, because there's a lot of research to show that arts-based medicine is extremely effective in oncology, and in fact, I just wrote a paper about it because I want to educate more oncologists and those who work in the oncology field about integrating arts-based therapies, because not everybody wants to sit and talk.
Right.
And for some people, that can work, and for some people, that's a disaster, and to expect everyone to be the same, I think, is really not, it's just not helpful. And art is, you know, whether you're doing a meditation and you're really able to get into your body, you're able to really look at the somatic clues that you're feeling and
mm-hmm.
get out of your head and not talking, you know, but really listening. It gives you an opportunity to really connect with yourself, your true self, and it's imperative. It's absolutely imperative. And
The meditation is just so helpful for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And every oncologist across the nation should be encouraging their patients to participate in some form of meditation or something that can help them. You know, maybe your meditation is, you know, gardening. That can be a meditation also.
Yeah, like active mindfulness kind of stuff. Yeah,
exactly, exactly. Yeah. So really finding what would be, you know, most helpful for you is very important.
And the idea that you'll be more tuned in to yourself and even all of the different emotions that you're experiencing. So often, mm-hmm. I think we find that, especially during trying times, people can have a really difficult time identifying emotions, even emotions that, you know, we would view as being fairly simple, basic emotions. But when there's a lot going on and it's confusing and there are lots of emotions, as you discuss in your book, mm-hmm. it's important for everyone to be able to really be tuned into them, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as a therapist, you know how important that is. And if you don't know what you're feeling, then you really can't take the next step unless you identify, you know, not what someone else might have gone through, but what
right.
you're feeling in that moment. So okay, if I'm feeling, you know, extremely anxious, I need to really look at that. Where is this anxiety coming from? And to really take stock every day with, you know, what you're going through and what you might need. And
yeah.
and really allowing yourself, you know, giving yourself permission to have those feelings and to seek out, you know, good support for that. If you're feeling like you can't handle it on your own, then find a good therapist to work with, get some body work. I mean, there are a lot of resources, and I've actually listed a whole resource guide in the back for people to at least investigate.
No, it's so great, everything you've done. I want to go back to the first part of the book because I love that you made this like a day of 30 days, so a month worth of topics. So, you know, you have patience and surrender, things like trust, strength, humor, courage. And I would think that for someone who is going through a difficult time, to have these little chapters that are so packed with really important information is just the perfect amount to digest in a day.
Well, I hope so.
And the way it can build on each other, you know, so they build on each other. So by the time you get to the end of the month, you know, you've really accomplished a lot and you can feel like you've done a lot.
Well, that's my goal. You know, that's really, you know, my goal. I really wanted women to feel empowered. And I know from personal experience, the only way to feel that way is really you have to go through the dark part, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to not be afraid
of that.
Yes. And, you know, it's not a comfortable place to be. It's a very scary place to be. But it's imperative. You can't shut yourself off to the emotions that you're not comfortable with. That isn't, you know, healing is sort of this, it's a whole journey, and the journey is going to change. And I just think looking at the dark as well as the light is the way to go.
Yeah. You know, I've had, we can continue the discussion after this next break, but I've had mm-hmm. a number of authors from your publishing company on New World Library who talk about dreams or, you know, after death experiences and that kind of thing, and how they can help people, and I think you're trying to do the same thing, really get in touch with this idea of intuition or this deeper part of ourselves, that we have this kind of capacity that we often don't believe we have, that just needs to be, we just need to tap into it. And, you know, I was thinking as I was reading your book that you always hear people saying, oh yeah, well, he or she has really great intuition, as if only some people have it. And yet, you know, you're talking about giving everyone the information so that they can tap into that. And I'd like to have you talk about that when we come back from the break.
Sure.
You're listening to Relationships 2.0. We'll be back in a few minutes. Stay tuned.
Do you tend to overreact and let your emotions rule your interactions with others? Do you become defensive or find it difficult to see things from another's point of view? Hi, I'm Michelle Skeen. You're not alone. Despite the fact that we all have to deal with people in our daily lives, many of us have difficulties with interpersonal relationships. My suggestion? Pick up a copy of the Interpersonal Problems Workbook. This book combines powerful evidence-based techniques for strengthening relationships in all areas of your life, whether it's at home or work, with a significant other, a parent, or your child. To find out more about the Interpersonal Problems Workbook, go to my website, www.michelleskeen.com. Again, www.michelleskeen.com. Pick up a copy and improve your relationships.
America's wounded warriors are coming home. After serving on foreign shores, these brave men and women are returning to their families and communities. Many have wounds you can see, and many have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Now that these warriors are back home, they are ready to enter the civilian workforce. To help, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These extraordinary men and women bring proven world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork to the job. And to ensure the right warrior finds the right job, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right match. When you hire a wounded warrior, you hire an intelligent, talented, and committed new employee. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, I'm Michelle Skeen, psychologist, author, and host of Relationships 2.0. On my radio show, I interview guests who present their unique perspectives and expertise on topics that cover all aspects of relationship. If you want to improve your relationship, and let's face it, we all have room for improvement, tune in to Relationships 2.0 with Dr. Michelle Skeen. If you miss my show or you're interested in listening to past podcasts, you can go to my website, www.michelleskeen.com. Again, www.michelleskeen.com. Tune in and improve your relationships.
Welcome back to Relationships 2.0. I'm chatting with Janet Roseman. She's the author of If Joan of Arc Had Cancer, Finding Courage, Faith, and Healing from History's Most Inspirational Woman Warrior. Janet, tell everyone how they can find you.
Oh, they can find me if you go to Facebook/If Joan of Arc Had Cancer. I have a Facebook page. So they would be able to find me there. And you can also contact New World Library if people want to get a hold of me. And I'm happy to talk to whomever. I also do trainings with healthcare professionals because I'm really interested in integrating the tenets of the book so people can then go out and work with the book with their clients.
Yeah. Do you want to say more about how clinicians can use this information, use you and the information in the book to work with clients?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, the book was written primarily for, obviously, women who had a diagnosis. And then while I was writing it, it occurred to me that it would really be a lovely training program for those who work in oncology because, as I mentioned earlier, often verbal therapy is usually, you know, pretty much the standard. And,
yeah.
And I think that's great, but it doesn't work for everybody. And I think bringing in the arts-based component and, you know, even using some of the self-reflective exercises that are in the book and bringing that to your therapist to talk about could just be, you know, gems of wisdom and offer another, you know, deep sort of excavation of one's psyche that you can share, you know, with your healthcare provider. And that's how I envisioned it. So I would love it to be used by, you know, whomever would benefit the most. And I think it speaks to both camps.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about intuition.
Yeah. Well, intuition is key,
yeah.
Right? In life, it's key. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of healing, intuitive healing, for a really long time. And what I've learned, and I can share, which is the absolute truth, is intuition is really about trust. It's really about trusting yourself and really honoring the information that you get. And when you trust, you know, how many times have we said, oh, wow, you know, I did blah, 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 but something told me I shouldn't have, right?
Yeah.
So that's your intuitive voice saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, that's really not right for you. So the more we trust our intuition, the better, because usually, and also I would add, the intuitive voice is also clear. The intuitive mm-hmm. voice doesn't speak for, you know, 4 hours. The intuitive voice usually gives information in small bits.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's very clear. Mm-hmm. And the more you work with it, the more you're able to really discern, you know, what is true, the true intuitive voice, and what is just sort of like noise. Because there's a difference. You know,
say more about that. Because, you know, so people who have a tendency to, say, worry might mm-hmm. think that all of these worry thoughts are their intuition in overdrive.
Well, I guess that's possible, you know. I guess it really depends on the person. But usually, the worry is sort of, if you can get past and sort of clear out the worry and just sit with the worry, you know, mm-hmm. and actually sit down and say to yourself in, you know, a sacred space when you're calm, not when you're driving, you know, when you're sitting
right.
in quiet.
Don't
and
meditate
just,
while you're driving, people.
Right, right. Please don't do that. But, you know, really, you can sit with it and ask yourself, you know, I'm worried about XYZ. You know, I'd like some information about XYZ that would help me. That
yeah.
would be for my highest good. And see what kind of information you get. You know, one of the easiest ways to develop the intuitive voice, really, is by keeping a dream diary and listening to your dreams and mm-hmm. paying attention, because often that's a place where people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, keeping a record and looking at that information, I mean, that's one way.
Yeah. I had Irvin Yalom on a month or so ago, and
oh.
he was saying, he just came out with a new book.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you should pick it up. I think you'd really enjoy it. It's called
okay.
Creatures of a Day. And, you know, he loves the dream work, and he said that he really likes to have his clients, when they, first thing when they wake up in the morning, write down their dream because it quickly kind of escapes, but that there's so much. And the reason I think you'd love this book is that there are these little stories of his interactions with clients, and in each case there's a, you know, a dream situation that and it, that comes to play out that's very interesting. And so he says that he likes to have his clients write it down as soon as they wake up, because then we get so involved in our day that it quickly kind of disappears, and rarely do they stay with us, at least in the kind of detail that, you know, that we could record.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You know, there's a whole tradition. It's called the Asclepian dream tradition, where people would go in ancient Greece when they were ill, and they would go to dream healing temples. And during this process, your dream would be interpreted by priests or priestesses of the Asclepian temple. And you would go there for healing. You would eat really good food. You would bathe in the waters. I mean, there was a whole ceremony and ritual around it.
Yeah.
And in fact, the you know, the insignia that physicians wear with the snake, with the
the staff or the rod or whatever that
is? Yes, that is the Asclepian staff, and Asclepius was considered the father of medicine for his time and the father of dream healing. So it's a very interesting and very, very powerful tradition.
Yeah, that's great. So listening to yourself, paying attention to what visits you while you're sleeping, right?
Yes, and you know, you can even ask, and before you go to sleep at night, you can ask for help. You can call on your spirit guides to help you. You can ask, you know, if you're having a difficult time, you know, you need help. And you'd like some information in your dreams, and really, you know, use your dreams. They're not just simply silly little fantasies that you have all the time.
It's a way to work through. It's a way to work through things. And yeah, I was thinking about the way that your book is set up. Again, that first part where, you know, every day you're reading about something, that reading that before going to sleep could really trigger some great healing dreams too.
Oh, I love that. I hadn't thought of that. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, but they could be like a nighttime read, you know, it would be great to prescribe it that way, right?
I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot. And especially, you know, reading Joan's words.
Yeah.
And her message, you know, the intuitive message that's in each chapter, I think would be a really nice sort of setup for that. Great idea. Great idea. Thank
well,
you.
Well, great books inspire great ideas. So so dreams are important. I mean, I love that you said intuition's about trust. It really is. And so often we doubt that and we don't trust ourselves, which is so interesting, right?
Yes. And, you know, what I've learned doing this work, you know, intuitively for quite a long time, it's not something that happens in a week.
Yeah.
Or a month or even a year. I mean, it's an ongoing journey that you'll be doing, and it's a lifelong process of wisdom. You know, really finding that internal wisdom and trusting it. And also, you know, when I mentioned the noise, knowing and being able to discern what is intuitive for you, because my process might be completely different than your
right.
process. And that takes practice and intention.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking, too, for, you know, like the worrier or the anxious person. They're going to have to get clear on what is just their cycle of worrying and what is, you know, what's their intuition speaking to them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, as I said, even writing down,
yeah,
journaling,
I mean,
what you're hearing,
so
and trying to identify where that's coming from,
mm-hmm.
or maybe drawing it,
mm-hmm.
seeing what it looks like, that might be an avenue, because everybody gets, you know, their information differently, and you're going to see things differently. So, you know, in some of the visualizations, I think that might be a nice kind of guide and beginning exposure to, you know, how do I work with this? You know, use the meditations because they're active and they're there for you. They're there for, you know, for healing.
Yeah.
That's what they're about. I mean, there's not a whole lot about the philosophy of it's really active-based. You know, try this.
Yeah. Tell me about how writing this book that was really inspired by a message from your mom was for you and how present she was in this process for you.
You know, it's funny. I wrote the book very quickly after she had passed, and I whenever I write books, because I've written a number of them, I'm so in the process. You know, it's a mm-hmm. place I really love to be, and I don't really remember. Right, I mean, it was funny. I did a book signing the other day, and I was reading something from the book, and one of my friends was there, and she looked at me, and she said, you know, I was laughing. You read something, and then you kind of had this smile on your face. And as if, you know, like, oh, wow, this is really good.
Yeah.
And I laughed because
I honestly... As if you're reading it for the first time.
Exactly. I did not remember writing it. And I thought, oh, my God. So I know... I mean, thank God I was even in the presence of horrible, horrible grief, I was able to write.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was an amazing gift. And, I mean, my mom was definitely the inspiration. I mean, her courage was remarkable and amazing. And I really wanted to pay tribute to her. And, in fact, there's a picture of my mom and myself, the last picture we ever took together. And I think about her every day. Not a day goes by that I don't talk to her or consult her or, you know, think about her.
And that's really important for people to hear that. I have a number of people in my life who have lost loved ones who they were very close to, and that that connection doesn't stop with death, and that there's I love your book because it also I think it communicates that while that's not specifically what the book is about, I think that there's just this awakening and awareness and tapping into intuition and the use of meditation that it goes beyond just our relationship with ourselves. But it can extend to people who have passed through to a different realm, whatever your beliefs are.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the next book I'm writing is called The Eternal Bond, which is about mothers and daughters. But I'm
Oh, that's great. Oh,
yeah.
I love that. Is is New World going to publish that?
I don't know. I'm working on it at the moment. So we'll
see.
That's
so great. Oh, I'm so excited. Please stay in touch with me.
Oh, I will. I will.
Because I have a daughter, and I feel like, definitely Eternal Bond.
Well, you know, grief is a funny thing, and our culture wants everybody to move on and let go.
Yeah.
And it's time, and after losing, you know, both my mom and my dad, I can tell you, you know, grief is really about love. The energy is love, and that energy can never, ever, ever be severed. It just can't.
Yeah. And
anyone who tells you, you know, no, let them go, just move on, that I don't prescribe to that. What, you know, what I tell people is bring them with you.
Yeah.
You know, bring them along. They're still, they're not here physically, but they're, you know, that connection is so profound that that could never be lost.
Yeah.
Never. Can't be.
Yeah, that's it's beautiful and a great reminder to everyone. Well, Janet, I absolutely love your book, and it's such... well, it's inspirational.
Well, thank you so much. I really am. I'm very happy that you liked it, and I'm very proud of it.
You should be. Thank you so much for joining me again. The book is If Joan of Arc Had Cancer, Finding Courage, Faith, and Healing from History's Most Inspirational Woman Warrior by Janet Lynn Roseman, PhD. And obviously, it's available on Amazon, as is everything.
Yes. And New World has it on their website, too.
And New World Library as well, and they have other great books. And I'd love to have you back, Janet. It was such a treat chatting with you.